from her because I saw it so rarely. I walked the few feet to the two men. Stephen was still kneeling, his brother huddled against him. He watched me with cautious eyes. He was rubbing his hand on Gregory's bare back over and over in small circles, the way you stroke a sick child when they want some touch to let them know they're going to be all right. Looking into Stephen's eyes, I knew he didn't believe that. He didn't believe Gregory would be all right, and it terrified him. I knelt beside them and was almost the same height as Stephen. I met that pale gaze, that demand, and said, "I'm going to try and heal him." It was Caleb who said, "If Micah couldn't heal him, why do you think you can?" I didn't even bother glancing back at him. "It doesn't hurt to try."
"You haven't seen your first full moon," Merle said. "You can't call flesh and heal him. Not yet. Maybe not ever. Calling flesh to heal is a rare talent."
I did look at Merle. "I'm not going to call flesh. I'm not even sure how that works."
"Then how will you heal him?" Merle asked.
"With the Munin."
"How will a werewolf ghost help you heal a were-leopard?"
I shook my head. "I've healed the leopards before using the Munin."
"You've healed Nathaniel," Cherry said. "Twice. But no one else."
"If it works for one of you, it should work for all of you," I said. Cherry was frowning. "What's wrong?"
"You heal with Raina. Everything was sex with her, and you want Nathaniel in that way. You've never been attracted to Gregory."
I shrugged. She was pretty much voicing the same doubts that I had, but hearing them out loud made them sound worse. I felt more doubtful that I could do it, and more slutty because I needed sexual attraction to heal. But I was getting over the slutty feeling. If I could save both Gregory's hearing and his life, a little embarrassment wasn't too high a price to pay. I looked down at Gregory, still huddled in a tight fetal ball around Stephen's lap and waist. He held on as if his brother were the last solid thing in the universe, as if he let go, he'd swirl away and be lost. I touched his hair lightly, and he moved his face so that he could see me through a tangle of pale curls. I swept the curls away from his face. It was a gesture you used for a child. I'd hated Gregory once because of some things he'd done when Raina and Gabriel were still alive. But the moment they were dead and he knew he had a choice, he'd stopped doing most of them. Had he made me Nimir-Ra on purpose? Staring into his wide blue eyes, I didn't believe that. It wasn't naivete. It was a surety that Gregory just wasn't that dominant. To decide even in a split second to change the status quo that profoundly was just beyond him. He'd debate or ask advice or ask permission, but he wouldn't make a unilateral decision without some feedback. I knew this about Gregory. Richard didn't. I touched his face, cupping it, raising it so he'd meet my eyes without having to do that eye roll that unnerved me. Just too subservient for my taste. I stared into that beautiful face, let my gaze glide over the fall of curls, the line of his back, the curl of his hip, but I felt nothing. I could appreciate his beauty, but I tried very hard to think of my leopards as neuter. You can be someone's friend and have sex with them. The trick is you have to want their emotional and physical well-being more than you want to fuck them. If you cross that line and want sex more than their happiness, then you aren't their friend. Their lover, maybe, but not their friend. But it was more than that. Cherry was right. Gregory had never moved me in that way. I sighed and moved my hand back from him.
"What's wrong?" Stephen said.
"He's pretty to look at, but..." Stephen almost smiled.
"But you need more than just a pretty face to lust after."
I shrugged. "Sometimes my life would be simpler if I didn't, but yeah."
"I remember I had to talk you through the first time you healed Nathaniel," he said, voice soft.
I nodded. "I remember too."
Gregory sat up, watching us both, trying to read our lips, I think. There was something frantic about the way he tried to decipher what we were saying.
"God, please let me help him. He was so scared." "I think of him more like a child. No offense."
"You think more like a parent than a seducer. That's a good thing," Stephen said.
Don't apologize for it.
Cherry joined us, kneeling on her heels, long body curved in graceful lines.
You called Reyna in the Lupinar without any lust, right?
I nodded. I can call Reyna's Munin, sometimes even if I don't want to, but she always demands a price before she leaves.
You didn't seduce anyone at the Lupinar tonight,
she said. No, but I damn near started a fight by hitting Richard, and that was part Reyna's doing. She enjoyed my loss of control, and she was worried about the pack tonight. She doesn't like what Richard's done. I think she toned down her demands because of that.
And she doesn't care about us like she does the wolves.
No, she doesn't.
What are you afraid of? Stephen asked. That you'll molest Gregory?
I shook my head.
No, I'm afraid Reyna will. You healed Nathaniel in the woods and didn't do anything awful to him,
Cherry said. No, but I had Richard and the pack there to balance me, to help me control her through the marks. Without extra help in that area, Reyna's idea of payment can get a little messy.
Define messy,
Stephen said. Sex, violence. I shrugged.
Messy. You have the pard here now, Cherry said. You can use us for balance.
Truth was, without Micah here, I wasn't sure I could do that. Just as Richard was my door to the wolves, Micah was my door to the leopards.
Or was he?
I was treating this like I treated Richard and Jean-Claude, like I was the outsider, and they were my ticket in. But what if I really was the Leopard Queen? If I really was Nimir-Ra, then I should be able to do this without Micah. I realized the moment I doubted that, I was still hoping I wasn't going to be furry next full moon. No matter how much evidence to the contrary, I still didn't believe it. Maybe I didn't want to believe it. But I wanted to heal Gregory. That I did want. I looked at them all and knew Cherry was right. If I was Nimir-Ra, then I had all I needed to balance me. If I wasn't Nimir-Ra, then it wouldn't work. What did we have to lose? I looked at Stephen and Gregory, their mirror faces, their frightened eyes, and knew exactly what we had to lose if I didn't try. I took the Uncle Mike's sidekick holster complete with Firestar out of the front of my jeans and looked around. If I was going to be calling on the leopards, I didn't want them having to worry about the gun. I motioned Claudia the were-rat over. Since I was still kneeling, she towered over me, only 2 inches shorter than Dolph. I had to admit it was impressive, even more so because she was a woman. I handed the holstered gun to her and she took it. Make sure no one gets shot with it. She frowned down at me.
You think someone is going to try and get the gun?
Me, maybe.
The frown deepened.
I don't understand.
Reyna's amused by violence.
I don't want to be carrying a gun when I call her Munin. Claudia's eyebrows raised.
You mean she'd try to get you to use it on someone?
I nodded.
She's tried before?
I nodded again. In Tennessee when I was practicing with the Munin, yeah. Claudia shook her head.
You didn't seem that worried at the Lupinar.
I can call her once and be okay, probably. But if I call her too often, too close together, it's like she grows... I hesitated. Stronger. Or maybe I just get tired of fighting.
She was a bitch when she was alive, Claudia said.
Being dead hasn't changed her much, I added. The tall woman shivered.
I'm glad the were-rats don't have anything like the Munin. The thought of some entity inside me just creeps me out.
Me too, I said. She looked down at me, thoughtful now.
I'll keep the gun safe. Is there anything else Igor and I can do to help?
I tried to think of something, but only one thing came to mind. If the leopards can't control me, make sure I don't hurt anyone.
How bad is this going to be? She asked.
I shrugged. Normally I wouldn't be this worried, but last time I called her, she didn't get her bit of flesh or sex. Hitting Richard made her happy, but... I tried to explain. I called her 3 times in a row for practice without molesting or hurting anyone. My teacher, Marianne, and I both thought it was a sign that I was gaining control of Reyna. Then the 4th time I called her, it was worse than it had ever been. You either pay as you go with Reyna or you end up owing her. And owing comes with interest, and the interest is hell to pay.
Should you give me the knives then, too? Claudia asked. She had a point. No pun intended. I took the wrist sheaths off, folded them up, and handed them to her.
I thought you could control this shit.
Caleb was standing just a little behind and to one side of Claudia. He was looking up at the tall woman as if wondering what she'd do if he tried to climb her. I almost wanted him to try because I was pretty sure what would happen, and even more sure that I'd enjoy watching it. Caleb needed a good lesson from someone. I can.
Then why all the precautions?
I could have told him about the time in Tennessee when Raina's Munin nearly started a riot among Vern's pack in a sort of game of rape tag, with me as the rapee. But I didn't. Instead, I said, if you're not going to be helpful, stand over to the side and shut the fuck up. He opened his mouth as if to protest, but Merle said,
Caleb, do what she says.
His voice was quiet, a deep rumble of sound, but that mild tone seemed to work on Caleb like a charm.
Sure, Merle. Anything you say.
He went to stand over to one side near Dr. Lillian and Igor. I glanced at Merle. Thanks, I said. He just bowed his head at me. Dr. Lillian said,
I take this to mean that you want me to wait on the injection.
I nodded. Yeah. She turned and walked back through the sliding glass doors into the darkened house. Everyone else stayed where they were, looking at me. Even Caleb, sulking by the railing with his arms crossed, was still watching the show. I slipped my shirt off and felt, rather than saw, all my people react, like wind through a wheat field, involuntarily. I never undressed in front of people unless I absolutely had to. The black bra I was wearing covered more than most swimsuits, but there's something about letting people see you in your underwear that just makes all us good little girls squirm.
Black lace, I like it, Caleb said.
I started to say something, but Merle beat me to it.
Shut up, Caleb. And don't make me tell you again.
Caleb settled back against the rail, arms hugging himself, face crinkled into a sulk that made him look even younger than he was.
Go on, Merle said. He won't interrupt again.
I looked at him. It was bad that he kept interfering. It undermined my authority, but since I wasn't entirely sure I had any authority over Caleb, it was okay, I guess. But it bugged me. I just wasn't sure what to do about it. I appreciate the help, but if our pards really do merge, then Caleb is going to have to learn to respect me, not you.
You don't want my help?
He made it a question. Priority tonight is Gregory, but Caleb and I are going to have to come to an understanding.
Are you going to shoot him, too?
I tried to read Merle's face and failed. A sort of blank hostility was all that showed.
You think I'll have to?
Merle gave a very small smile.
Maybe.
It made me smile a little. Great, just what I need. Another discipline problem in my pard. His smile vanished like a hand had wiped it away.
We're not your cats, Anita. Not yet.
I shrugged. Whatever you say.
We are not yours,
he said. I watched his face and saw something cross it in the moonlight. Maybe if I'd had better light, I could have deciphered it. Why does the thought of me being in charge bother you so much? He shook his head.
It's not you being in charge that bothers me.
Then what is it? He shook his head again.
What bothers me is you trying to be in charge and failing. Failing really, really badly.
I do my best, Merle. That's all I can do. He nodded.
I believe you. But I've seen a lot of people try their best and still not make it.
I shrugged and let it go. Be pessimistic on your own time, Merle. We need a little hope here, not negativity.
I'll just shut up then,
he said, which implied that if he couldn't be negative, he had nothing to say. Fine by me. I turned back to Gregory and his wide, frightened eyes. I touched his face gently, trying to ease some of that fear, but he flinched ever so slightly when I touched him. You get enough abuse in your life, and you begin to think that every offered hand is a blow waiting to strike. It'll be all right, Gregory, I said. Since he couldn't hear me, I must have been saying it to reassure myself. It didn't seem to do a damn thing for Gregory.
I tried to see Gregory as a lust object, and I failed. I ran my hands over the smooth skin of his back. I grabbed a handful of those yellow curls, looked into those lovely eyes, but all I could feel was pity. All I could feel was protective towards him and how much I wanted to keep him safe. He was totally nude, sitting in front of me, and he was lovely. There was nothing wrong with the way he looked, except that I didn't see Gregory in that way. Trust me to find a way to make virtue a problem. I turned to Stephen, who was still kneeling beside us. I'm sorry, he's beautiful, but I want to hold him, keep him safe, not have sex with him, and protective instincts are not going to get Reyna to come out. Cherry said, You simply called Reyna at the Lupinar. Why is this different? I looked up at her, standing nude and comfortable against the deck railing. Zane was next to her, clothed, and just as comfortable. I can call Reyna, but I can't guarantee she'll help me heal Gregory. The healing usually comes with lust, not without.
Call her, Stephen said. Once she's here, maybe the rest will come.
You mean call her Munin, then get her in the mood, not me. He looked very solemn, but he nodded. You know what her idea of sex is, Stephen. He nodded again.
Trust me, he said.
Strangely, I did. He wasn't dominant, in fact, was very often a victim, but Stephen did what he said he'd do, at almost any cost. There was a desperate stubbornness in him, no matter how often you knocked him down. I'll call the Munin.
And I'll make sure that Reyna sees Gregory the way she needs to see him.
We looked at each other and had one of those moments of near-perfect understanding. Stephen would do anything to save his brother, and I would do almost anything to help him do that. 30. I sat back on my heels in front of Gregory, and I opened myself to the Munin, dropped that barrier that kept Reyna out, and she spilled up through me like warm water filling a pipe, up, up, riding on a wave of eagerness that she hadn't had at the Lupinar. A thrill of fear went through me. I knew it was a bad sign, but I didn't fight her. I let her come, let her fill me up, let her laugh bubble from my throat. When she looked at Gregory, she had no trouble seeing him as a sexual object, but then Reyna saw almost everyone as a sexual object, so no big surprise. I touched his face, caressed the line of his jaw. Gregory's eyes widened. I realized in that moment that he might not know what the hell we were doing or what had changed. I could call Reyna and think rationally. I'd fought long and hard to be able to do that. I could be distant while my hand glided down Gregory's bare chest. I could stop my hand, our hand, at his slender waist, and Reyna couldn't force me lower. She snarled in my head, giving me a visual of her in wolf shape, snapping at me. But it was just a visual, like a dream. It couldn't hurt me or anyone. Reyna spoke in my head.
This wolf still has teeth, Anita.
You know the rules, I said.
What?
Stephen asked. I shook my head. I'm talking to Reyna.
That is just creepy, Zane said.
I agreed with him wholeheartedly, but Reyna was already talking in my head and I couldn't answer him.
I know the rules. Anita, do you?
Yeah.
I do whatever I please.
And I try to stop you, I finished for her.
Like old times, the voice in my head said.
It did sound like the relationship we'd had when she was alive. She wanted to kiss Gregory, and I didn't fight it. The kiss was open-mouthed, but soft, nothing that would scare me too badly. In her own way, Reyna was learning how to work me, too. I'd never kissed Gregory before, never wanted to. I still didn't want to. Kissing, in some ways, is more intimate than intercourse, more special. I pulled away from his lips, and Reyna was just as happy to kiss the side of his neck. His skin was warm and smelled like soap. I buried my face under his hair at the back of his ear and found the hair still damp, smelling of my shampoo. I tried to call healing from Reyna, but she fought me.
No, not until after my reward.
I actually had leaned back from Gregory and must have said it out loud because Stephen asked,
"What reward?"
I shook my head. Raina won't heal him until after she's been fed. It was a type of feeding. In her own way, Raina was like the Ardure, except she only needed feeding when I called her. Her craving, not mine. "What do you want?" I asked it out loud, because I still wasn't comfortable with having silent conversations in my head. She gave me a visual of kissing down his chest, of forcing him onto his back on the deck, and the next thing I remembered clearly was laying a gentle kiss beside Gregory's belly button. He was lying on his back, watching me with unfocused eyes. I was lying across his body, pinning his legs, my nearly naked chest pressed over his groin. I didn't remember getting there. Shit. I rolled off of him, and Raina came like heat, racing through my body, drawing my mouth down to his hip, licking along that small hollow just where the waist meets groin. Gregory writhed under the stroke of my mouth, and as much as I'd tried to ignore it, drew our gaze to his groin. He was hard, ready, but the sight of him pushed Raina back, left me in control, not because it was embarrassing, but because I had never seen Gregory erect before. He was still lovely to look at, but he was an odd shape, almost hooked at the end. I didn't know that men could be made that way, and it stopped me cold. Raina screamed in my head, roared over me in a rush of body memory. The memory was of being on all fours with a man riding me from behind, riding Raina. I couldn't see who it was. All I could do was feel. They'd found that spot in a woman's body, and the rush of orgasm was close. Raina threw her, our, head back, a rush of auburn hair flinging free of our face, and I saw Gregory's reflection in the room's mirror. Raina whispered in my head, "It's always like that with him from behind because of his shape." I tore free of the memory and found myself on all fours beside Gregory, one hand on his body. I fell back from him because the shared memories didn't work without body contact. I turned my face away so I wouldn't see him nude and ready, because I could still feel the memory of him inside my body, Raina's body. A hand touched my bare arm, and the rush of memories this time was overwhelming. I was there. He filled my mouth, my throat, came inside my mouth in a spill of thick heat, and with his body trembling, thrashing, teeth tore into thick, tender flesh, and we ate him. Blood poured upwards, and Raina bathed in it. I fought free of it, screaming, shrieking, and someone else was screaming. It was Gregory. For one awful second, I opened my eyes because the memory was so strong I couldn't tell the difference between it and reality. But when I could see again, he was whole, crawling away from me, from the shared memory. Because that was one of Raina's gifts, the ability to share the horror. I could still feel the thickness of meat in my mouth, taste blood and thicker things. I crawled to the railing, pulled myself up, and lost everything I'd eaten that day. Someone came up behind me, and I put out a hand, head still dangling over the dark edge of the deck. "Don't touch me!"
"Anita, it's Merle. Nathaniel said that no one was to touch you that had ever shared a..."
He hesitated.
"Moment with the old Lupa. I didn't know her. She can't hurt you through me."
I held my head in my hands. It felt like it was going to split apart.
"He's right!"
His grip on my shoulders was as hesitant as his words. I pushed away from the railing and the world swam. Merle caught me, held me against his chest.
"It's all right."
"I can still taste meat and blood and... oh, God! God!"
I screamed it, and it didn't help. Not for this. Merle held me against his chest, tight, my hands pinned to my sides as if I'd tried to hurt myself. I didn't think I had, but I didn't know anymore. Months of practice, and Raina could still do this to me. I screamed wordlessly over and over again, as if I could scream the memory out of me.
Every time I drew breath, I could hear Merle whispering, "It's all right. It's all right, Anita. It's all right."
But it wasn't all right. What Raina had just shown me would never be all right. Merle carried me into the bathroom, and I didn't protest. Caleb wet a cloth and put it on my forehead without a word of teasing. A small miracle, but not the one we needed. 31. Raina had gone, fled, laughing, pleased with herself. God, I hated that woman. I'd already killed her. It wasn't like I could do anything else to her, but I wanted to. I wanted her to hurt like she'd hurt so many others. But I guess it was a little late for that. Dr. Lillian was shining a tiny light in my eyes and trying to get me to follow her fingers. I wasn't doing a good enough job, apparently, because she wasn't happy.
You are in shock, Anita, and so is Gregory. He was a little shocky before you began, but damn it!
I blinked and tried to focus on her. My eyes just couldn't settle on anything, as if the world were trembling. But that made no sense. Maybe I was the one that was trembling? I couldn't tell. I clutched the cover they'd put around me, huddling on my white couch amid the multicolored pillows and couldn't get warm.
What are you saying, Doc?
I'm saying that Gregory's chances are worse than 50-50 now.
I blinked and fought to look at her, meet her eyes, to think.
How bad?
70-30, maybe. He's curled on the deck in a blanket, shivering worse than you are.
I shook my head and couldn't seem to stop. I closed my eyes, forced myself to be still for a second, a heartbeat. I spoke without opening my eyes.
I saw... How did Gregory heal?
I stopped, tried again.
How did he survive what she did to him?
We can regrow any body part short of decapitation, unless fire is added to the wound to close it. We can't heal burns unless the burned flesh is completely removed, in effect making a new wound.
Her voice was bitter, fierce. I'd never heard her so angry. I looked up at her.
What's wrong with you?
Lillian looked down, wouldn't meet my eyes.
I was the doctor on call the night she did that to Gregory. I saw the reality, not just a memory.
I shook my head and had to bury my chin on my knees to stop the movement.
It isn't a memory with the Munin, Doc. It's real. It's like a live-action movie, but with me in the movie.
I hugged my knees and tried desperately not to think, not to revisit what I'd experienced. I was actually having some luck being absolutely blank. Even my mind had finally found something so terrible it couldn't cope with it. In a bizarre way, it was comforting. I'd finally found a line that I could not cross.
If I try to force Gregory into animal form now, it'll probably kill him,
Dr. Lillian said. I buried my face into my knees, hiding. I spoke with my mouth buried against the thick covers.
I can't try again.
No one is asking you to call that bitch again.
Anita.
It was Nathaniel. It wasn't his voice that made me look up. It was the rich, bitter smell of coffee. I found him holding my baby penguin mug full of fresh coffee. It was very pale, lots of sugar, lots of cream. Good for shock. Hell, good for everything. He helped me rescue my hands from the blanket and wrap them around the mug. I held the mug tight, and it took several seconds to realize I was burning my hands. I didn't panic, just handed the mug back to Nathaniel. He took it, and I stared at my pink, red hands. I had first-degree burns, and I hadn't felt the heat until it was too late.
Damn,
I said softly.
Lillian sighed. I'll get some ice.
She left us alone. Nathaniel knelt in front of me, being careful not to spill the coffee. Merle and Cherry glided into the living room while I was still staring at my reddened hands. Cherry sat beside me on the couch. She was still nude, but it didn't matter. Nothing seemed to matter. Merle stayed standing, and I didn't even bother trying to look up at him. All I could see were the silver toes of his boots.
Nathaniel said that you touched his beast when you marked his back,
Cherry said. I blinked at her, meeting her pale eyes. I nodded. I remembered a shining moment, after I'd marked his back, actually, where I'd felt his beast roiling under the touch of my power, and I'd been sure I could call that part of him, make him shapeshift for me. I was still nodding, and made myself stop, saying, "I remember." Lillian came back out and applied bags of ice wrapped in a small towel to my hands.
"Try not to hurt yourself for a few minutes. I'm going back to check on Gregory."
She left me with the three leopards and my ice.
"If you touched Nathaniel's beast, there's a chance you could call Gregory's now."
I shook my head. "I don't think so." Cherry gripped my arm.
"Don't fall apart on us now, Anita. Gregory needs you."
The first flare of anger pushed through the shock. "I have done my fucking best for him tonight." She dropped her hand away from my arm, but didn't look away.
"Anita, please. Merle thinks you may be strong enough to call Gregory's beast even before your first full moon."
I clutched the towel-covered ice to my chest. The sudden cold across my nearly naked chest helped clear my head. I thought that wasn't possible before I shifted for the first time.
"With you, Anita," Merle said, "I would be a fool to say what you can and can't do."
I let the ice fall on the coverlet in my lap and looked up at the big man.
"Why the change of heart? I failed Gregory out there on the deck."
"You risked yourself for one of your cats. It is the very best a Nimmer Ra or Raj has in them, to take great risks for their people."
I touched the towel, found one corner wet, and knew the plastic bag hadn't sealed completely. I moved the bag right side up so it wouldn't spill anymore.
"What do you want from me?"
My voice sounded as tired as I felt. Merle knelt in front of me and I met his eyes. There was a look in them that I didn't want right now. He seemed to trust me, and I didn't feel trustworthy. I felt scared.
"Call Gregory's beast."
"I don't know how. When I was with Nathaniel, it was..."
I sighed.
"It was sexual,"
Cherry finished for me. I nodded.
"I am not trying for that kind of mood with Gregory again tonight. I don't think either he or I could handle it if it went wrong again."
"Calling the beast doesn't have to be sexual," Merle said.
I met his strangely trusting gaze. I was beyond tired. I just didn't have anything left tonight, not for Gregory. I did not want to touch him again tonight. Part of me was afraid that Reyna would make an unplanned appearance, though I knew that was almost impossible for her now. I did have better control than that. But
how can I ever touch Gregory again and not remember that?
"I don't know," Cherry said, "but please, Anita, please help him.
How do I call his beast without getting in the mood?" I asked.
"You need to talk to someone who can call the beast from their people," Merle said.
I looked at him.
"You got someone in mind?"
"I am told your Ulfric can call the beasts from his wolves."
I nodded. "So I hear."
"If he called a wolf into form while you watched, then he might be able to show you how to do it."
"You really think it will work?" I asked him.
"I don't know," he said, "but isn't it worth trying?"
I handed him the leaking bag of ice.
"Sure, if Richard will come."
Nathaniel answered that one.
"Richard blames himself for Gregory's injuries. If we offer him a chance to heal him, he'll come."
I stared at Nathaniel, watched the intelligence in those flower-colored eyes. It was one of the most insightful things I'd ever heard him say. It gave me just a little hope that indeed Nathaniel could be made whole, that he was getting better. I needed some hope just then, but it was still unnerving for Nathaniel to know Richard so well, to be that observant. It meant that I'd underestimated Nathaniel. I kept equating submissiveness with being inferior, and that wasn't really the case. Some people chose to be bottoms, to serve. It doesn't make them less, just different. I looked into his face and wondered what else I'd missed, or what else he'd show me. It was a night for revelations, so why the hell not have Richard join us? How much worse could it get?
Please, no one answer that.
32. I brushed my teeth and sat at the kitchen table in the dark, drinking coffee while we waited. Nathaniel padded barefoot into the room, his hair swinging loose around his bare chest and the jean shorts he'd put on. "How's Gregory?" I asked.
"Dr. Lillian put an IV in him to help with the shock," she said.
He stopped beside the table, not quite in front of me. "An IV? Richard will be here within an hour or less. If she put an IV in, then..." I let my voice trail off. Nathaniel finished for me.
"Gregory's very hurt."
I looked up at him in the darkened kitchen. The only light was the small one over the sink. It left most of the room in thick shadows. "You don't mean the injuries he got from the wolves, do you?" He shook his head, all that hair sliding around his body. A long, heavy strand slid over one shoulder, and he tossed his head to flip it back behind him. I'd never been around a man that had such long hair who was so comfortable with it.
"He kept talking about Raina," Nathaniel said. "Kept swearing under his breath."
His voice had dropped low, almost a whisper. He was staring over my head at things I couldn't see, and probably didn't want to. I touched his arm. "You all right?" He looked down at me, smiled, but not like he was happy. He moved his hand so he was holding mine. His grip was tight, like he needed the comfort. "Talk to me, Nathaniel."
"I gave you copies of three of my movies."
He smiled, wide this time, before I could say anything.
"I know you've never watched them. When I gave them to you, I still thought you were like Gabriel and Raina, that it had to be sex, that you would like that they were porn. I understand now that you'll take care of us no matter what, not because you lust after us or because you love one of us, but just because."
He went to his knees, still holding my hand, pressing it against his chest with both his own. He laid his head on my lap, his face turned away from me. I moved a thick line of hair away from his face so I could see his profile as he leaned against me. We sat there for a few moments, me waiting for him to continue, him maybe waiting for me to prompt him, but the silence wasn't strained. One of us would fill it when we were ready, and we both knew that. He was the one who sighed, keeping one hand on my hand, pressed to him, his other hand curling around my leg. I could feel the beat of his heart against the back of my hand.
"I did more movies than just those three, most of them with Raina. Gabriel wouldn't let her have me as a lover or a slave. I think he knew she'd kill me, but on film where things could be controlled..."
He hugged his body against mine, clinging.
"What happened?" I said softly.
"She did that to Gregory on her own, as a kind of fun. But when he survived it, she wanted to do a version of it on film."
I went very still for a second or two. I think I stopped breathing because when my breath finally did come out, it shook.
"You?"
I made it a question. He nodded his head, cheek still pressed to my thigh.
"Me."
I stroked his hair, stared down into that young face. He was 6 years younger than me, almost 7, but it seemed like there should have been decades between us. He was so much a victim, so much anyone's meat.
"Gregory wouldn't do it again, said he'd kill himself first, and Gabriel must have believed him."
I kept petting his hair because I didn't know what else to do. What do you say while someone whispers horrors in your ear, tells you their most intimate, nightmarish secrets? You sit, and you listen. And you give them the only thing you can, the silence and the safety to talk and to be heard. His voice dropped soft, softer, until I had to lean my face over his to hear him.
"They chained me down, and I knew the script. I knew what was about to happen, and I was excited. The fear made the anticipation almost unbearable."
I laid my cheek against his, felt his mouth move as he spoke, and I kept very, very quiet. I had nothing to offer but my silence and my touch. He whispered,
"I like teeth, biting. I like a lot of damage. It was wonderful until..."
He closed his eyes, turned his face into my jeans as if even now he couldn't look at the memory. I had lifted my head up when he moved, but laid a gentle kiss on the back of his head.
"It's okay, Nathaniel. It's okay."
He said something, but I couldn't understand it. What? He moved his head just enough so that his mouth wasn't buried against my leg.
God, it hurt. She took it in pieces, wanted it to last longer than it had with Gregory.
His whole body gave one great shiver, and I leaned over him, my free hand across his back, smoothing the hair away so I could reach his skin. I stroked over his back and found all the little bite marks I'd left in his skin. I hadn't felt bad for marking him until now. Now I felt like I'd used him like everyone else had. I curled my body over his, hugging him into my lap, holding him as close as I could. I am sorry, Nathaniel. So sorry.
You don't have anything to be sorry about, Anita. You've never hurt me.
Yes, I have. He raised up enough to meet my eyes. He looked so young, eyes wide.
I love that you've marked me. Don't be sorry about that.
He gave a small smile.
If you start feeling guilty about it, you won't do it again. And I want you to. I want that very much.
If I feed on you, Nathaniel, for the ardour or the flesh or whatever, I'm using you. I don't use people. He held my hand so tight that it almost hurt.
Don't do this to me.
Do what?
Don't punish me for telling you about how Raina hurt me.
I'm not punishing you.
I tell you this horrible thing, and you start feeling protective of me and guilty. I know you, Anita. You'll let your head get in the way of what we both need.
And what exactly is that? And even I could hear the impatience, almost anger, in my voice. He raised up farther, bringing his face close to mine because I'd sat up, distancing myself from him.
You need to feed the ardour, and I need to have a place to belong.
You are welcome in my house as long as you need it, Nathaniel. He shook his head, pushing the hair back impatiently, letting go of my hand, putting his hands on my knees, half crawling under the table so that he was kneeling between my legs, though only his hands touched the tops of my knees. He stared up at me.
No. You tolerate me. I do some housework, errands, but I don't belong. You don't go through your day thinking about me. I'm here, but I'm not part of your life. I know that. If I am your palm de song, then I will be. I'll finally belong to you in a way that both of us can live with.
I shook my head. No, Nathaniel. No. He grabbed the legs of the chair and picked the entire thing up with me on it from a kneeling position and moved it backwards with a bump so he could fit under the table better. He hadn't even strained when he did it. He put his hands on the chair arms, slid his lower body against the chair, putting my knees on either side of his hips.
And who else are you going to feed off of every day? Richard? Jean-Claude? Micah?
The ardour may be temporary, I said. He put a hand on either side of my waist.
If it's temporary, then feed on me until it goes away. If it's permanent...
I don't want to feed on anyone. His hands slid around my waist, his head going to my lap, and I realized he was crying.
Please don't do this, Anita. Please don't do this.
I stroked his hair, his face, and didn't know what to say. What was I going to do if the ardour was permanent? Richard didn't let anyone feed off of him for any reason, same rule I had. Jean-Claude would be literally dead to the world when I most needed to feed. Micah was still a question mark. But in some ways, feeding off of Nathaniel because he was the only one that would let me was almost worse. I lifted his face from my lap, a hand on either side. Tears glittered on his cheeks in the faint light. I kissed his forehead, kissed his closed eyes the way you would a child's.
Did I get here just in time, or am I interrupting?
It was Richard standing in the doorway. Perfect fucking timing, as always. 33. I froze with Nathaniel's face cradled in my hands, him kneeling between my legs with the table hiding most of him, having just risen from kissing him, and knew how it looked. I wasn't sure I could explain it to Richard's satisfaction. To my knowledge, Richard didn't know about the ardour yet, and right then I didn't want to tell him. I laid another gentle kiss on Nathaniel's forehead and leaned back. I wasn't going to act like I'd done something wrong when I hadn't. Nathaniel took his cue from me, laying his head back in my lap, which I realized meant he was invisible from the doorway, the table hiding what he was doing. Richard strode into the kitchen like an angry wind, his power biting along my skin. He came to stand where he could see that Nathaniel had his cheek against my thigh, gazing up at the larger man as he towered over both of us. Jamil and Shang Da were hanging back by the doorway. They were good bodyguards, but some things bodyguards can't keep you safe from. I felt my face go neutral, empty, vaguely pleasant. I was comforting one of my leopards. Something wrong with that?
He looks very comfortable,
Richard said, voice mild enough, but his power was hot, like opening the door to an oven. I licked my lips. I was going to have to explain the ardeur sooner or later, and since I wanted him to help us save Gregory, tonight was probably the right time. Nathaniel and I were discussing some side effects of marrying the vampire marks.
You mean the ardeur?
He said. I was surprised and let it show. Who told you?
Jean-Claude thought I should know. He encouraged me to come over and be here for you in the morning.
And you said? I kept my voice as neutral as I could, but not as neutral as I wanted it to be.
I don't let him or Asher or any of them feed off of me, blood or anything else. I don't see why I should change that rule just because it's you, and it's sex instead of blood.
Did he explain that if I don't feed off of you or him, I still have to feed off of someone?
There's always your Nimmer Raj.
The contempt in his voice was thick enough to walk on. Mike has been called away on pard business.
You really think he won't be back before morning so you can fuck him? I do.
I stared up at him, still sitting in the face of his burning power and the sheer physical presence of him. Richard was one of those big men who never seemed big unless he was angry. He seemed big now, and I wasn't impressed. I started petting Nathaniel's hair, and he snuggled in against my legs, letting the tension ease out of his body. You dumped me, remember?
And did you fuck him for the first time before or after you found out I'd dumped you?
I had to think about that for a second or two. After, I said.
You mourned my loss for what, half a second?
I felt heat crawl up my face. I was out of moral high ground, and explaining that it was the ardeur just wasn't good enough for Richard. It took all three of us to get into this mess. Don't make it worse.
Don't you mean four of us, or is it five now?
I must have looked as blank as I felt. I don't know what you're talking about. He grabbed the table and shoved it backwards with a scream of wood on wood. Nathaniel stayed curled around my legs and just looked up at him. I'd never gotten my gun back from the were-rats. I had gotten my knives back, but I wasn't really willing to cut Richard up. Not yet. Not for this. I couldn't arm wrestle Richard, not and win, so really my only option was to sit, look perfectly calm, and tell him by my facial expression what a fucking asshole he was being. He shoved the table again, making the wood scream. Then he knelt beside Nathaniel and pushed his long hair back. He bared his back and stared at the bite marks.
Is that all?
He asked, voice fierce, his power so high it was like treading in boiling water up to my chin and still rising. No, I said. Richard gripped the back of Nathaniel's shorts and pulled, the movement so violent that Nathaniel's entire body moved with it. I heard the button from the top of the shorts bounce along the floor. Richard jerked down the shorts and stared at the bite marks where they trailed even lower. Richard leaned over Nathaniel, not quite touching, but he was like some huge presence, and I felt Nathaniel cower against me. Richard hissed into his ear.
Did she suck you off? She's good at that.
That's enough, Richard. Nathaniel answered. No.
You're so scared of me, I can't tell if you're lying or not.
He grabbed a handful of Nathaniel's hair and pulled him backwards, peeling him away from me. I had one of the wrist sheath knives in my hand and didn't remember drawing it. The point was pressed against the long line of Richard's throat, and even I was breathless at the speed of it. It must have been a blur of movement. It wasn't human speed. Everything froze. Shang Da and Jamil moved into the room. I pressed the point deeper against Richard's neck. Don't interfere, boys. They stopped moving. I met Richard's gaze and found his eyes had gone wolf amber.
Let go of him, Richard. My voice was low, but it seemed to fill the room.
You wouldn't kill me for this.
His voice was low, careful too. Kill? No. But bleed? Oh, yes.
You need me to help you save Gregory.
I could feel his pulse beating against the tip of my knife. I won't let you hurt Nathaniel to save Gregory. His grip actually tightened on Nathaniel's hair, and I pressed the point in enough to draw the first crimson drop.
Would you be this upset if it wasn't Nathaniel?
He said. This is the only warning I will ever give you, Richard. Never touch one of my people again.
Or what? You'll kill me? I don't think you'll do it.
And I realized in that moment that if I wasn't willing to kill him, I had no threat. And I really wasn't willing to kill him. Not over this. Not yet. I drew the blade back from his neck and watched him relax, the tension easing away from him, his hand still in Nathaniel's hair. I moved without thinking, and I was fast enough that the knife cut across his forearm before he could react. He jerked away, came to his feet, and took a step back, holding his bleeding arm. The cut was deeper than I'd meant for it to be because I'd rushed it. Blood dripped from between his fingers. Jamil and Shang Da moved into the room. I stood and drew Nathaniel with me as he pulled up his shorts to cover himself. I put the French doors at our backs. You are never to lay a hand in anger on my leopards, Richard, you or any of your wolves. Jamil was helping Richard press a towel to the wound. Shang Da had gone for Dr. Lillian.
It would serve you right if I just walked out and left you and your leopards to fend for yourselves.
You'd leave Gregory to be permanently deaf or dead because we had a fight? He's in danger because you couldn't control your temper or your wolves.
It's my fault, right? All my fault.
I just looked at him, Nathaniel behind me, the bloody knife still in my hand. Richard gave a laugh that sounded more out of pain than humor.
I've let everyone down tonight.
He looked at me, and there was something fierce in his face that wasn't his beast, but just sheer emotion. Anger, pain so deep it was like anguish.
I'll help you save Gregory because you're right. It is my fault. I'll take this.
He raised the wounded arm while Jamil still held it.
Because you're right again. I had no right to touch one of your people. I wouldn't have let you abuse one of my wolves either.
Dr. Lillian came in, took one look, and started scolding us for being children who couldn't play well together.
He's going to need stitches. Shame on you both.
Richard stared over her head as she cleaned the wound. I think he wasn't really glaring at me. He was glaring at Nathaniel. He was genuinely jealous. Jealous in a way that he shouldn't have been. What had Jean-Claude told him about the Ardure and about Nathaniel, and about what we'd all done together at the circus? Jean-Claude wouldn't actually lie, but he might make things sound worse if it suited his purposes. But what purpose did it serve to make Richard jealous of Nathaniel? I would have to ask Jean-Claude about that. I had time to call while Richard got stitched up. 34. Jean-Claude admitted only to telling the absolute truth. But, he added, if because of that, Monsieur Zeman was jealous of Nathaniel, this wasn't an altogether bad thing.
He will share you with me because he must, and he will share you with Micah also because he must. But we are both alphas, dominants. To share you with someone like Nathaniel, that is different.
You changed something about the story to make Nathaniel sound like more of a threat, didn't you?
No, ma petite. I merely told the truth without leaving anything out. He is not entirely happy with Jason, either.
Jean-Claude, you can't do this to Richard. You'll drive him mad.
Mad enough, perhaps, to finally acknowledge that he cannot live without you, and that he must come to terms with our triumvirate.
You Machiavellian shithead. You're playing with him.
I am trying to maneuver him into doing what must be done if we are to survive. If that be Machiavellian, so be it.
You are making things worse, I said.
I don't believe so. I think, ma petite, that you still do not understand men. Many men will give up a woman if they are unhappy with her. But let another man try to claim her, and often they find they still do want her.
You and Micah aren't competition enough? I asked.
As I explained, we are his equals. Nathaniel is lesser, and that will prick his pride more.
I didn't think Richard had that kind of destructive guy pride.
I think there are many things you do not know about our Richard.
And you do?
I am, after all, a man, ma petite. I believe I understand the male psyche a tiny bit better than you do.
I couldn't argue with that. Well, give me a heads up next time you plan to do any maneuvering. You could have gotten one of us killed. He sighed.
I do keep underestimating the stubbornness of both of you. My apologies for that.
I leaned my forehead against the kitchen wall.
Jean-Claude. Yes, ma petite?
I closed my eyes. Tell me exactly what you think Richard thinks about Nathaniel and me.
I told him the absolute truth, ma petite, nothing more and nothing less.
I turned around, put my back to the wall, looked out at the empty kitchen. Richard was in the downstairs bathroom getting stitched up. Nathaniel was with the other leopards. I'd given strict orders that he was not to be left alone. I just wasn't up to Richard and him actually having a fight. It would be too ridiculous or pathetic. And what does that mean that you told the truth, no more, no less?
You will not like it.
I don't like it now. Just tell me, Jean-Claude.
I told him what had happened with the ordure, and added my own belief that the reason you so often find Nathaniel around when sex is in the air is that you find him sexually attractive.
That did not make Richard come over here and start a fight.
I do remember adding that you might find a less demanding male refreshing after the two of us. Someone who did not make so many demands on you. Someone who merely accepted you as you are.
You do that, I said.
So good of you to notice,
he said.
But it is not I that has been living in your home for months, and from what I smell on Nathaniel when he comes into work, sharing your bed.
Any of the were-leopards are welcome in the bedroom when they stay here. It's like a big pile of puppies. It's not sexual.
If you say so.
His voice was soft, mocking. Damn you, Jean-Claude, you know I don't see Nathaniel that way. He sighed, and it was heavy.
I think it is not me that you lied to, ma petite, but yourself.
I am not in love with Nathaniel.
Did I ever say you were?
Then what are you talking about? He made a small, exasperated sound.
Ma petite, you still believe that you must love every man that you come to physically. It is not so. You can have very pleasant, even wondrous sex with a friend. It does not have to be love.
I was shaking my head, realized he couldn't see it, and said, I don't do casual sex, Jean-Claude, you know that.
Whatever you are doing with Nathaniel, ma petite, it is not casual.
I can't use him as my pomme de sang. I can't.
Your morals have reared their ugly heads, ma petite. Do not let them make you foolish.
I opened my mouth to protest everything he'd said, but closed it and just thought about what he'd said for a few seconds. Did I find Nathaniel attractive? Well, yeah, but I found a lot of men attractive. That didn't mean I had to be intimate with them.
Ma petite, I can hear you breathing. What are you thinking?
What he said made me think a new thought. When we first married the Marks, I could almost read your mind, unless you concentrated to keep me out. Now it's not like that. Maybe the ardure will be temporary, too.
Perhaps. We can but hope.
If I have the ardure, I'll have to have sex. Isn't that what you wanted?
I would be a fool to deny that your enforced chastity is burdensome, but I would never willingly inflict the ardure on anyone. It is a curse, ma petite. The bloodlust that I feel can be sated. My blood can only hold so much. But the ardure, oh, ma petite, it is never truly satisfied. There is always that ache, that need. How could I wish that upon you? Though if our Monsieur Zeman would cooperate, it might be the answer for the two of you to finally reach some permanent arrangement.
What, move in together?
Perhaps.
His voice was very careful when he said that one word. Richard and I can't be in a room for an hour without arguing unless we are having sex. Somehow I don't think that makes for domestic bliss.
I felt the first emotion he'd let me feel over the phone. Relief. He was relieved.
I want what is best for all of us, ma petite, but as things grow more complex, I am no longer certain what best would be.